suggestion that he has some sort of damaging information about President Trump. I'm Chris Barnes.
Two young women under arrest in a Saturday night incident that left a New York City police officer in critical condition. The 18 and 19-year-olds faced charges of hindering prosecution. Police say the officer was dragged two blocks by a car that suddenly took off in the middle of a traffic stop in Brooklyn. USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allen Root, and I take care of my own health. That's why I subscribe to Life Extension Magazine. And now you could do the same for free. Life Extension Magazine is the ultimate source for health. Every issue is jam-packed with the latest therapies and innovative treatment protocols. And now you could take charge of your own health. My listeners could get a free 6-month subscription to Life Extension Magazine. Just call toll-free 855-870-6622. That's 855-870-6622. Or go to lifeextension.com/war.
Facebook says they're taking steps to help fight terrorism on the internet. Here's more from correspondent Mark Mayfield.
The social media giant is responding to calls for closer regulation of the internet after this weekend's terrorist attacks in London. Facebook Director of Policy Simon Milner said on Sunday that the platform works aggressively to remove terrorist content. Milner said, quote, "We want Facebook to be a hostile environment for terrorists." UK Prime Minister Theresa May said earlier on Sunday that the internet and big companies that provide internet-based services give terrorist ideology what she calls the safe space it needs to breed.
When it comes to looking for a new car, many people spend hours online looking at different websites, visiting different dealers. But do you spend that much time looking at where you're getting your financing for your car? Here's correspondent Chris Barnes.
You need to put as much effort into learning about financing as you do into learning about your car.
That's consumer advice expert at U.S. News and World Report, John Vincent, who's warning people away from long-term financing deals.
A bank or a car dealer will tell you, hey, you know, we can get you into this car for that payment. We're just going to extend this payment out to 8 or 9 years. You don't want that car to be out of warranty and have to be paying for repairs at the same time you're still paying a lot on car payments every month.
Vincent says if you have to stretch to be able to afford any car, you're probably stretching too much. I'm Chris Barnes.
For all the latest up-to-date news and in-depth analysis of today's headlines, join us online at usaradio.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Weather today, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 2 p.m. Cloudy with a high near 75. Calm wind becoming south 5 to 7 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher amounts possible with thunderstorms. Tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, cloudy with a low around 59. South wind 5 to 7 miles per hour becoming east after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New rainfall amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Tomorrow, a chance of showers, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 9 a.m. Cloudy with a high near 62. East wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the morning. Chance of precipitation is 60%. New rainfall amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch, except higher among amounts possible in thunderstorms. Tuesday night, a chance of showers, cloudy with a low around 51. Northeast wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Wednesday, same old, a chance of showers, cloudy with a high near 61. Northeast wind around 6 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. This is NAMI's hour, compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We have no office. We work out of our houses, our own phones, that sort of thing. And what we try to do is we try to help people who have a mental illness or someone in their family may have a mental illness, and we do it in various ways. One of the ways we do it is we teach a 12-week called family-to-family course, which helps people understand more about their loved one's illness. And it doesn't have to be a blood relative. It can be your neighbor next door, somebody you work with, whatever. In that class, we talk about medications, side effects. We talk about what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain situations. And we try to get people to realize what it's like to be the person with the illness. And we have to understand and realize that regardless of the illness or how bad or how serious it is, there's a human being under that illness. And we also run support groups, and we try to do that once every month. It's the third Thursday of every month, and we hold them here in Flemington at 52 East Main Street. And they run from 7 to 9 o'clock. You don't have to register. You can just come. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to come. We also have what they call a basics course, which helps families who have children under the age of 18, and that's a six-week course. The course is family-to-family and basics. You have to register for it because we can only have so many folks in the class. But anything else we do, you don't have to register. If you need help with something, and we have a phone number you can call, it's 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't man the line 24 hours, but we do have someone that checks it at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you as soon as possible. We are very privileged today
to have with us Rob Walton, who is a new NAMI board member and currently a freeholder. And about a year ago, I think, at a grammar school here in Hunterdon County, Governor Cody's wife gave a speech about her postpartum depression. And then I believe you spoke about your illness. And I thought that was very courageous. And I was really very impressed because, you know, you're a freeholder and everything. And it's not easy to speak about your illnesses and so on and so forth. So consequently, I was very, very, you know, proud of you, actually. Well, I didn't even know you then.
Thank you, Larry.
But, you know, so I thought that was awesome. And since you were stepping out to speak about it, and I think that it helped others who were there, because not only the governor's wife or ex-governor's wife, but also a freeholder would get out and talk, you know, a local person. And I think that was awesome. So for that, I congratulate
you. Thank you.
You have said to us, you know, in the past, since you joined NAMI and everything, and are at our meetings, that you suffer from depression also.
Correct. I did suffer.
I'm much
better now, thankfully.
Yeah. That's good.
Yes.
When did your depression first start, you know?
My depression history is kind of complicated. I guess it's my most recent bout of depression followed the death of my father. My father died in December of 2013. He had suffered from cancer and asthma. Had a lung issue from smoking for years, and he finally died in December of 2013. He was told he had 6 months to live in February of 2013, and he made it about 10 months, so I'm very happy for that. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably the trigger, either the getting told about his terminal illness or when he actually died. And a few weeks after that, I had a cancer scare myself. So those two events really were, as I look back in my experience, were triggers to my depression.
Sure.
I dropped a lot of weight after the cancer scare. The doctor said, if you want to avoid these cancer scares, they found polyps in the colonoscopy that I got. You should lose weight. So I dropped a whole bunch of weight. And of course, that changes your biochemistry. So all of these things created a real toxic mix that really threw me into a very bad state of depression. And I didn't address it. I didn't deal with it. And it got worse and worse and worse. It developed into suicidal ideations, developed into taking out my anger on my family. And that's when I finally started to get help. In about August of 2014, I began to get help with a therapist and turn my life around.
Did you realize that this was depression?
Yeah, I think I did. My grandmother was agoraphobic. She never left the house when she was, as I remember her. And I just thought that was grandma. She just sat around in a robe all day and looked out the window. That was just grandma. My father, following the death of my mother died when I was 13. Dad was, I guess, 40. She was 39. He fell into a real bad state of depression. And he was on Prozac and other medications for years, for the rest of his life, as a matter of fact. And it was very interesting looking back at how my mother's cancer was very public. She was the president of our board of education. Everybody knew she had cancer. She lost her hair. And because of that, we had an outpouring of support from our community. People came and helped us out with dinners, with all sorts of stuff.
Right, right.
My father, however, had an equally debilitating disease. His depression kept him in bed for days at a time. Just could not function. His law practice suffered. And from a capacity standpoint, it was every bit as debilitating as my mom's cancer.
Sure.
And had it gone untreated, it could have been every bit as fatal. And growing up, I guess I knew my father had depression. He spoke about it from time to time, but I didn't really get it or understand it.
Right.
And that caused in me a lot of ill will towards my father. Why didn't Dad take care of us? Why didn't Dad get up and go to work each day? Why didn't Dad, you know, just do the normal things a father would do? And not knowing that he had a disease for which he couldn't control, you know, build up these kind of animosities towards him. And don't get me wrong, I love my dad. We had a good relationship, but there are always these lingering things. Why didn't Dad do better? And as I began to learn about my own disease, I came to understand better what Dad had gone through and what he was experiencing. And shed a whole new light on my relationship with my father. Unfortunately, it was after he had died. So in going back through my sort of my history, I had a depressive episode sometime in high school following my mother's death and was very down. And at one point in my teenage years, I had a knife in my hand. I remember wanting to stab myself and kill myself. I didn't, never had a suicidal act, just only suicidal ideations. After college, I had another depressive episode. My friends were all very concerned about me, and I met my wife, and that changed everything. Turned myself around. So I think if I'm looking through my mental health history, that episode following my dad's death was probably my third major depressive episode that I can remember that I've experienced.
It's interesting how people have different ways of understanding their illness. And it's interesting also to me that there's certain triggers that trigger people. There's people who live their whole life and don't have a trigger. And, you know, they don't go off the edge for depression or bipolar or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's other people who have triggers. And they can be as simple. Well, I know someone who has a wife, a couple of kids, very, very high-paying job, corporate world. And one day, he lost his best pen. And that was his trigger. That was his trigger. He wound up in a state hospital for months. Marriage went downhill. And he never got back to where he was. Now, I'm not saying that something else couldn't trigger it. It just so happened that that was what triggered it. But, it, you know, and with your dad, you know, it's tough when you're younger trying to understand a parent who's acting not what you think is the way they should act or doing not what you think they should be doing. And we see it a lot because a lot of families, you know, either the mother or I know somebody who real well whose wife is that way. And, you know, it's so tough for the kids, you know. And the father has to take them here and there and everywhere, you know. And school activities and after school activities, it's because the wife just can't do it, you know. And then she'll go off on a bizarre tangent. And, you know, and it's tough because you're seeing the kids growing up seeing this and you don't know if they understand, you know, or if that are, they're at an age to understand.
Sure. That's kind of what got me to finally get the help. My depression exhibited itself as anger. And I would get very agitated very easily and very quickly. And in the world, when you're at work, when you're out in the public, you can't exhibit that anger. You've got to bottle it up. You've got to act with a certain level of decorum. And I tried the best I could, and I'm sure I lost it from time to time. But at home, I was freer to take it out. So my son would do some normal 13-year-old misbehavior that a normal 13-year-old boy would do and like not take out the trash or pick up after himself. And instead of taking the normal response to that by scolding him or maybe raising your voice a little bit, I would go ballistic. And I would scream and holler to the point where he would start crying. And one time I'm screaming at him mercilessly, and he didn't deserve it. It was something innocuous that he had done. Certainly deserved a little tongue lashing, but not what I was doing.
Right.
I was like, I got to stop this. This is not good. I would then calm down. I would go back to my son, and I would say, you know, that's not, Dad's got a problem. He's dealing with this. But I wanted to stop that. And that's what really finally got me to get the help that I needed.
You know, it's... have you found anything that you can do if you feel something coming on that you can, you know, control?
Sure. That's one of the things that I think was most critical in learning how to get out of the depression. You know, when you're depressed, you ruminate on things. These things bother you and you just focus on them for hours and hours on end. And that's not a normal behavior. Usually people get frustrated about something and a few minutes later they let it go and they're on to something else. With depression, at least with my depression, you know, you focus on this one thing over and over again in your head and roll it around, and it would just become very all-consuming. So changing the subject in your head. So if I find myself thinking about something for more than 5 minutes, I change the subject. Think about the Pittsburgh Pirates. Think about the Super Bowl. Think about...
You don't think about the Mets?
I think about the Mets yesterday when the Pirates beat them 11-1. So anything to change the subject in your head and get yourself off of that thing that's making you frustrated. Mm-hmm. That's really critical. Knowing that, and I've had this from time to time, knowing that this is whatever feeling you're feeling right now, it's temporary. And what one of the things that makes people who are depressed turn suicidal is that you don't think you're able to end the pain. This emotional pain you're in, this mental pain you're in, becomes so pervasive and so all-consuming, and you just don't see a way that it's ever going to end.
Right.
So the suicidal ideations and why depressed people kill themselves, it's not because they want to die or they don't want to live anymore. It's they want to end the pain.
They want to stop the pain, right.
And they just can't conceive of any other way that pain will go away. So when you start having some emotionally challenging moment, just telling yourself this is temporary, it'll pass, and almost as I'm saying those words, it passes. And with time, you had to say that to yourself. I've had to say that to myself less and less, and now almost not at all. But certainly, there are things that I know will might get me thinking about something upsetting again, and this will pass. It's just momentary, and I'll be fine.
And it's everybody has depression of some sort at some time in their life. They can lose their job, they can lose their wife, or they can, break up with a girlfriend or crack their brand new car up or whatever the case may be. And they can be depressed. Right. I left my job, or we got downsized, and I lost my job after, 18 years. And I was depressed. I was depressed for a week or so. I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't get out, wouldn't leave the house, And
there's the critical difference, a week or so.
A week, right?
Right. But after that, I said, I got a wife. I got four kids. I got a house. I got a mortgage. I got car payments. I better get off my butt and go out and get a job.
The depressed brain has a biochemical condition,
right,
as I've learned. I'm not a doctor, so, but this is what I've read since discovering that I have disease.
It's a chemical imbalance of the brain.
You're unable to move on. And that thing that the normal person gets over in a week, whether it's losing a job or losing a loved one, which might take 2 weeks or 4 weeks or a month, eventually you begin to move on from that. And when you're depressed, you just can't, and you don't. And you don't have, you can't conceive of a way to. That's what makes it so insidious, so hard to get rid of. It's just, you're unable to move on to something else.
Yeah, that's true, And like I said, it just with me, it was just, I had all these bills and, four kids to feed and the whole nine yards. So I better get off my butt and go out and get a job.
Yep.
But it's not that way for, like you said, for people who, have a mental health issue. And it could be, they can have depression and bipolar. They could, but what you mentioned before about the pain, that's why some people cut themselves. I know I've said this before. I used to be at the hospital, work on Saturdays for 5-6 hours, and I was in emergency service department. I used to go. Part of my job was to go to what they call the lockup unit up there and talk to the patients. And one day I was talking to them, and this one young man, I guess he was like 21, maybe around there, and he said, "Can I talk to you after?" I said, "Sure," So we went outside and in your little closed-in thing off the back there. We started talking. And he said, "Oh, I got to show you something." And he took his sleeves and he pulled them up on both sides. There wasn't a piece of skin that wasn't cut from his shoulder down to his wrist on both arms. I was shocked. I was like, I'm not often speechless, as you probably well know, but I just couldn't, I was just shocked. And finally, when I got around, I got my voice back, I said to him, "Why do you continue to do this?" He says, "Because it takes the pain away from my head."
Yeah.
And that really got me thinking, And then since then, I've obviously run into other people who, their loved ones, do the same thing. And it's just, it's sad. It really is. And you know, and like you said, people commit suicide because they can't.
Yeah, that was, you know, as I look back on my 2 years of going through this, of suffering this major depressive episode, you know, all of us have a primal survival instinct, which is pretty about the strongest instinct you have as a human being. To get to the point where that instinct is superseded by your desire to enter pain is just gives you an idea of how bad the depression really feels. You know, unlike a physical pain where you sort of know it's going to heal in time, the emotional pain, you get to the point where you feel there's no hope. And you know, the closest I ever got, I was at a parking deck, and I was hoping there'd be a parking space in front of the building. There wasn't. So I go over to the parking deck, and I'm praying there's a spot on the first floor, the second floor. And you keep going up, and like, oh, this is, I hope it's not going to be good. And I get up to the fourth or fifth floor it was, and I got in my car, and I got to the edge, and I looked over, and spent a good 5 minutes there just, you know, thinking whether or not to do it. You know, that's, and you just wanted the pain to be over.
Right.
And what got me through it was, you know, my kids, you know, you sort of do this calculus in your head. I'm a good Catholic, so I know that if I kill myself, I'm not going to go to heaven. So I'll, as I'm hurling down, I'll ask God for forgiveness just before I die. That'll sort of fix it. And, you know, my family will be okay. They'll, you know, they'll get my insurance money. My wife will be fine. But if it, you start getting, I got to my kids, and I just knew my kids couldn't
deal
go
with it.
Without me. Right. So, right. Or I, especially my son Alex, who's on the autistic spectrum. I just, he just would not be, I can't imagine what it would do to him. And you pull yourself back, and you collect yourself, and you go walk into your appointment, and like everything's fine. And then you walk out, you know, back to the car, and I didn't walk over to the edge. And you know, it was fine. That's the other things about these suicidal moments. They're fleeting, you know. And if you can just get through it, you'll usually be okay. And thankfully, I did. And
right.
Help I needed.
Right. Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Well, not funny. That's a poor choice of words. But I've seen over and over again where people will go into the doctor, psychiatrist or therapist or whatever, and they've learned to tell them what they feel that the therapist or doctor wants to hear. Not what's going actually on, but what they think they want to hear. And they play a game. I've run across a couple psychiatrists who are pretty good at shooting this down, okay? One of them did it to my son. He was in Hagedorn. He had come out of Trenton Psych for almost 19, 20 months. They transferred him to Hagedorn. And he was up there, and we had a family meeting. Psychiatrist, therapist, social worker, et cetera, et cetera. And the psychiatrist kept asking my son these questions, and he was telling them the answers that he thought she wanted to hear. About 10 minutes into this, all of a sudden she slams her hand down on the thing and she says, "Do you know who the only person in this entire building can sign your release? Me. If you don't stop BSing," she says, "you'll be here till you have a beard growing down to your knees." And he was like 22 at that time. And she says, "You better start telling the truth." Well, my son's jaw dropped. And I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and I just went, you know, took my head down, you know. And he just, from then on, he talked to her, and, you know, it's a shame because people do that. I hear it from families.
Sure.
I hear it, you know, from, you know.
I was in therapy for 8 months, and it took me a good 4 weeks before I finally began to start delving into the issues that troubling me. And you know, it took a long time just for me to open up. Now, in some cases where the person's a little more in distress, you got to move a little faster, and it sounds like you got the right person to move your son a little faster. My therapist was a little more patient with me, I guess, and maybe I could have used a good swift kick in the butt. But it's a long process, and it's why it's important to get it started earlier,
yeah,
and pick up on these things sooner.
Right.
It seems like you had a lot of, you learned a lot of positive self-talk techniques. Was that from the therapist or just came out of your own?
No, that was largely the therapist that sort of guided me on that. And then a lot of reading that I've done subsequent to that.
Right.
And once I sort of figured out what I had and began to understand it better, I started wanting to learn everything I could about it. And I've read dozens of books about it and just really tried to absorb as much as I could about what was going on with me, what happened. And it has changed the way I view myself, changed the way I view the world, certainly changed the way I view my father and my relationship. I wish I could bring him back and tell him how sorry I am that I didn't understand.
When you spoke earlier in the email you sent me, how was your dad's illness treated compared to your mom's cancer?
Well, we did not talk about dad's depression. My mom's cancer was very well known. Now, part of that was because my mom was a very prominent person in the community. She was the Board of Education president, so everybody knew that she was having these issues. She lost her hair. It was, but we never dared talk about what was going on with Dad, and he wouldn't talk about it with anybody. It took him years before he finally got some help. And that's the stigma attached to mental health. And, of course, that was in the late 80s. And here we are in 2017, 30 years later, and it ain't a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I guess drives me to talk about this in such an open way. And I was really inspired by Mary Jo Cody, who spoke about her postpartum depression. She spoke about it in such a frank way and direct way.
Yep.
And she talked about it in a way that anybody would talk about having a broken leg or kidney disease or even cancer today. Today, if a little kid gets cancer, they put their face on T-shirts and have 5K races for them. Everybody shaves their head in support. But you get depression, then you don't talk about it.
Right.
And that's dead wrong. Depression is not being crazy or being a lunatic. It is a disease of the brain. Instead of having a disease of the kidney or the heart or the lungs or the colon, it is a disease of the brain. And we live in a society where this is not my line, but from a young man who did a TED talk, where if you break your arm, everybody runs to sign your cast. But if you tell them you have a mental health issue, they run the other way.
Right.
And I've experienced that firsthand. And you know, I spent years suffering, taking it out on others, being angry, considering harming myself, because you don't talk about this stuff. And it's wrong. And it drives people further away. It drives people to avoid the treatment they need. It also hurts. It breaks a lot of relationships. That's one of the frustrating things that I've experienced was, you know, some really broken friendships because people didn't understand. And look, I get it. I was no picnic. But people didn't get what was going on. And then when you tell them, they, you know, I don't agree with you anymore.
Right.
Or talk to you anymore. So it's, so that's part of what drives me to talk about this and to join NAMI and to get involved in this is to really try to get people to understand and non-stigmatize this so people get help sooner. I don't want anybody to go through what I went through with this.
You know, it was ironic when Governor Cody's wife spoke. I'm not sure if she said it at the, well, I know she said part of it at the presentation that she gave, but when she was on the radio with me, she said that when she had breast cancer, everybody and their brother brought them lunch and dinners and can we take you here or drive you here, do this, do that. She said that when she found out that she had postpartum depression, just nobody called. Nobody came. Nobody brought anything. And when she wound up in the hospital, nobody came. Nobody, you know, called. Nobody took care of her family or anything. And she very openly said that when her child was born, her boy, and she was bathing him, she'd always think about drowning him. And, you know, and it was just, and her son was at that presentation.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. That was remarkable.
Right. Right. And, you know, I just thought that, wow, you know, but she said the same thing, you know, that nobody came, you know.
But I think talking about it is one thing. How do you help people understand more about the illness? There are a lot of misconceptions, wouldn't you say?
Oh, sure. People presume that you're going to be violent. And I've had that. I think people think I'm going to be violent. People think that you're crazy. What people need to understand is that people who are going through depression or through these illnesses, they don't expect anybody to fix them, but just be kind to them, be a little more patient.
Right.
I had one county employee who I snapped at, and he was just trying to be very helpful and kind, and he gave me a pat on the back and said, you know, it's okay, and he later, when I have been more open about this to some folks in the county, he said, I sort of knew that was going on with you, Rob, that's why I treated you that way. And I was just, it was wonderful to be
here. Right.
You know, it was one of the few people who did understand and treat people that way. And also just the notion of going and seeing a therapist. You know, if you break your arm, you're not going to say, I'll just walk it off. You go to the doctor. You go to the hospital. When you have, you know, some sort of a cold, you go and get your prescription. And there should be no shame in sitting down and talking to a therapist about this stuff. I'm very fortunate that talk therapy was what cured me. When I first went in to see my therapist, I went through the litany of things I was experiencing, and she looked at me kind of aghast and said, I want to put you on a drug. And I said, I don't need a drug. I'm not crazy. You know, I'd stigmatize my own disease. And maybe I needed one at the time. You know, I refused. I didn't, because, again, I didn't want to be considered to be in need of some sort of mental health drug. And I was blessed that I was able to get through without it. But I probably should have taken it, frankly, at the time. And it's because I didn't get it. I didn't get that I was just having a normal medical condition that could be treated in a host of different ways. And instead of having to languish for 18 months or 2 years with this, if the first sign of having these conditions, I had known about it, I would have gone to see a therapist and I would have spared myself
speeded
months.
It up
yes.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Timetable.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about stigma. And the stigma attached to mental illness goes back many, many, many years. You know, back a ways, most families had a Aunt Sophie, quote unquote, or Uncle Bert, quote unquote, who was eccentric. And they lived in a mountain, you know. And, you know, they weren't eccentric. They had a mental illness, right, 9 times out of 10. Yeah. And the family just disowned them. And they left them up there in a, you know, in an apartment someplace or whatever, and they never went to see them. And now we've come a long ways, not far enough, nowhere near far enough, but we have come quite a ways where a lot of the stigma attached to it, yes, there is still stigma out there, don't get me wrong, it is, but it's not as bad as it once was. We don't take people with mental illnesses and put them in far away cabins.
No, that's true.
We give
them the help they need, but we also don't talk about it openly.
No. You know, no, I'm not saying we do.
Your Aunt Sophie now is in a hospital getting the help she needs, but she's still not talked about at family functions or you know, at dinner parties.
Right.
It's not something you talk about.
But it's true. And I mean, the first 6 years my son was ill, I wouldn't talk about it. And my wife would want to talk, and I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd get in the car and go down to the truck stop and get coffee. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to talk about it. And my wife finally, after 6 years, drugged me to intensive family support services at the hospital. And a woman that was there then is long since retired, but she taught me how to deal with it. You know, and everybody has to deal with it in their own way. You know, my way may sound a little morbid, but I had a son, and he died. I pictured him in my mind in a casket. Now I have another son, and he has paranoid schizophrenia. And I do anything I can to help him, you know, short of murder, but anything, you know, anything to do, you know, that I can help him with. And, but the first 6 years, my wife drug it all on her back, and I wouldn't, you know. So it's, I'm assuming your family knows your mental health issues?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've been very open to my wife. She's been wonderful.
Who I met on Saturday, which was a very nice woman.
Throughout, and I've talked about it at length with my son. My oldest son is 15, so I've been very open with him about it in a way that my dad was not open about it with me, and purposely so, because my kids are genetic clones of me. They all look like me. They, you know, they have my mannerisms, and my wife does not like that at all. But that's how it came out. And so I always expect my son to, you know, come up with, to have this, these issues, and I talk to him openly about it so he understands it. Hopefully he'll, should he ever experience this, he'll know that he can either come talk to me or get the help that he needs.
All right, you've got a book there that's
I've got
been,
a couple of books,
Yeah, they've been, I've been dying to ask you about them, but I figured I'd wait a minute.
Sure. So one of the things, as I said, about learning about the disease was learning about people of historical significance or politicians like myself who went through depression. There were two great books that I've come across. One is called A First Rate Madness, and it was by a guy named Nasir Gahami. And the other one is Lincoln's Melancholy by Joshua Wolf Schenck. And they both talk about important figures in our political and in history who had depression and how they used it, in Lincoln's case, to inspire him to do great things, but also historical figures who, because of their depression, they looked at the world differently. And because they looked at the world differently, they were able to do great things. Martin Luther King and Gandhi both had depressive episodes. Martin Luther King tried to commit suicide at one point. Lincoln was put on suicide watch. General Sherman from the Civil War suffered depression. And, of course, he...
Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill, another great one. And Winston Churchill, you look at the history leading up to World War II, he saw Hitler being Hitler long before anybody else did. And everybody said, you're just nuts. Well, he was nuts, so to speak. But he had what's called depressive realism. Lincoln understood the same thing. He saw this great sin of slavery and knew that it had to be banished. And
Lincoln openly admitted he had, you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And you know, we, of course, we're all familiar with what Martin Luther King was able to do for our country and for civil rights, and Gandhi the same. Depressive realism is very interesting. They did a couple of interesting studies with people. They took two groups of people, one who are or have been depressed, and the other one who would be quote-unquote normal mental health. And they asked them to guess coin flips. So they would flip a coin, you'd guess what it was, heads or tails, and they would tell you if you were right or not. They wouldn't show you, they'd tell you. And they would let both groups believe they were 80% right, which is pretty darn good for guessing a coin toss. The people who were quote-unquote mentally healthy actually began to believe they were good at guessing coin tosses, which, of course, is preposterous.
Right.
Whereas the depressed people, because of their depression and looking at the world differently, maybe negatively, but certainly seeing the negative, would never believe that they were good at guessing coin tosses. They said, no, that's just random luck. The next 100 coin tosses, I'll guess 80% wrong. And it's that kind of, they call it depressive realism, where if you had these depressive issues, you see the world more realistically than does somebody who's quote-unquote mentally healthy. And certainly with Sherman, where he sort of knew that we've got to take the fight to the civilian population to win the war, it worked. With Churchill, who understood the rising threat of Hitler and Nazism long before anybody else did, long before Whitaker Chambers did, was able to rally his country to fight. Whereas Martin Luther King understood that you had to take a different approach to fighting for civil rights. You couldn't beat them with guns and with violence. You had to beat them with your heart and soul. These are great leaders who, because of their depressive experiences, changed the world. And as someone who's trying to change a little bit of Hunterdon County, it certainly was inspirational to see that I'm not alone in this and that there are great men and women who have had these problems.
Right. And there's a lot more famous people.
Sure, the whole litany, yes.
Right, yep. You know. But I think it's wonderful now that a lot of them are coming out and admitting that they have, whether they're singers or actors or whatever.
And that is so critically important. You know,
it is.
Our culture, one of the things as a politician you should learn very, very quickly is politics means not a whole heck of a lot. Your culture matters far more than does politics. And culture... You look at gay marriage as an issue, whether whatever side of the if it you're on, it wasn't politicians that made gay marriage become acceptable and commonplace in America. It was the culture. Right. The television shows and movies that changed the way we view gay people in America. And it's very heartening to see a lot of TV shows starting to deal with mental health in a serious way, not, you know, the crazy aunt somewhere, but deal with it in a legitimate, serious way and talk about depression and talk about these issues, because that's where people see life is through their movies, their TV, their culture, their songs, and seeing that portrayed in a way that's honest and sincere and seeing it resolved is very, very helpful. And certainly celebrities who come out and talk about it, it's just wonderful that you have people who you look up to who've experienced these issues and can talk about it.
You know, one of the other famous people that I find very interesting is Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, when he was writing the Declaration of Independence, he wouldn't go to the Congress and show it to him. He would get a hold of Ben Franklin, meet him on a street corner in the middle of the night, hand him the papers. Franklin would go into the Congress and talk. because Jefferson had agoraphobia, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, fear of crowds and stuff.
Yeah, that my grandmother had, yep.
And he would talk from a balcony to 5,000 people, but he wouldn't go on a street and see three,
yep.
You know, or come into a room that had 10, mm-hmm. You know. So it's just, and look where he went, you know. He wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know. And, you know, it's just other famous people, like you said, Patton, you know. He's a hero in World War II.
Sure.
And, you know, yeah, he had his little strange things about him, but he got the job done, you know, and saved lives, you know. And it's just, the list just goes on and on and on, you know. And I think that it's great that in this day and age now that some of the younger people are coming out, some of the younger actors, singers, you know, because I think that helps.
Oh,
I really do.
Absolutely. You know? My son's high school did a wonderful program talking about mental health and bringing it up. And they didn't have anything like that when I was in high school. You know, never talked about it. You know, you had your sex ed classes and you talked about drunk driving and wearing your seatbelt, and that was it.
We didn't even have seatbelts back when I was in school. You know, but they did talk about drunk driving,
sure.
You know, and you know, partying, and you know, and we didn't even have, the drugs weren't even that big of a thing, you know. Every now and then somebody had marijuana, but other than that, it was like, you know.
Yeah, can you tell us a little more about the program at high school, what they did?
I wish I could. I read about, I don't recall all the specifics. I know I read about it when they sent the notice home for my son as to what he was going to be going through. But they talk about what it is to have a mental health issue, that it is a disease as opposed to being crazy. They talk about some of the warning signs, and they talk about getting help.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you mentioned that you want to try to change Hunterdon County. Can you think of some immediate steps that would help? Or that are helping?
Well, we have a stigma-free task force that's doing some very good work in trying to raise awareness about the issue. And
I'm on
part
it.
Of that.
Yeah.
And I've been there from time to time to talk to mm-hmm. the group. That's sort of where I got started talking about my mental health issue. I think,
okay.
I don't know if you were at that meeting or not. I think you were not.
No, I was not.
Where I showed up and I said, hey, guys, I think you're doing great work, and here's why. And I sort of opened up about what I was going through. From a public policy standpoint, we just need to really raise awareness about the fact that this is not, that mental health issues are diseases like any other. Begin the conversation. Do what I'm doing. Talk about it. Be more open and frank about it. There's a wonderful program that two of our members do. I forget what it's called, about where they talk about their issues, their mental health.
Oh, In Our Own Voice?
In Our Own Voice. We had a wonderful session of In Our Own Voice at the medical center, and then certainly the program at Hunterdon Central with where Mary Jo Cody spoke years ago. But just getting out of the community and talking about these issues in a frank and honest way, the way you would push any issue, the way you would do any campaign, talk about it, get in front of folks and speak about it, emails, flyers, Facebook posts, all that stuff, just a general campaign to raise awareness about these diseases and these problems, and let people understand that, you know, you can be a Hunterdon County freeholder, you can be president of the United States, you can be a productive member of society and still have experienced these issues and be going through them.
And it's so widespread, really. People don't realize.
One in five people will have a mental health issue this year.
Affected.
And that's an older diagnosis. There's a later one that says one in four.
Yeah, I've talked about my issues a couple of times in different groups, and I get three different reactions. I get, you know, some polite applause. That is, that's good for you, Rob, you're talking about this, and that's nice. And then I get some people who run as far away as fast as they can. And then you get some people who come and give you big hugs and say, I've been through this myself. I can't believe you're talking about it. It's so nice to know that I'm not alone, that others have dealt with this. And that's been the best reaction, is when people are thankful and understand. It's feeling alone, that you're the only one that's going through this, feeling that there's nobody else who's ever felt this way or understands. That's what's so hard about this disease. You know, when I had it at first, didn't think anybody would understand or appreciate or care. And that drives you to internalize this. It drives you not to talk about it and deal with it, which only makes it worse. You know, it's one of those things mm-hmm. where the stigma, if you stigmatize somebody for being an African-American or for being gay, they don't become more gay or more black. But if you stigmatize someone because of their mental health issue, they can become worse and get more sick. And the further you alienate people, the worse they get. One of the best things for depression especially is socialization, just getting out and talking with people. And unfortunately, when it's one of the things that you've abandoned, people abandon you because of the way you're behaving, then you begin to feel even worse about yourself. Why are these people abandoning me? It's a very vicious cycle and can drive you very quickly into a very desperate position.
Right, right. I'll tell you, it's...
we have a few more minutes.
Yeah, in the last couple minutes, I don't want to get into a big discussion on politics, but I believe you mentioned that you're not going to run for re-election.
Yeah, this is my last term. I've been on the board for 8 years, and for 7 years I was in local government in Hampton. I spent a little over 4 years, almost five, as mayor, and a couple years as a councilman, and this will be my last term, at least for now or for the foreseeable future. I have a child who's going through these very same mm-hmm. issues, and it was like a bolt of lightning. I got a call from my wife one day that one of my children had written a note about wanting to hurt themselves, and it was devastating, just devastating to get this kind of news. And my wife called me because she knew I'd right. understand, and I left work, drove right over to the school, and we're getting this child of mine the help that they need. We sort of looked at how many hours there are in a day, and just had to pick the priorities.
Yeah, sure. And that's a priority. That's the priority.
They are, right. You know, my kids are my number one priority.
Sure.
And so this will be my last term, as I said. I don't know if this will be the end of my time in politics. It certainly will not be my end of time in public service. You know, I'm still a volunteer firefighter. I'm on the board of NAMI. Next Wednesday, hope to get reelected to the board of NAMI. We'll certainly see. And I guess that's sort of what will be my mission for the foreseeable future, is trying to get the word out about these problems and these issues. You know, coming out and telling people that you had suicidal ideation isn't exactly a way to win elective office. So, but as far as my time in as a freeholder, I'm very proud of the work that I've done, and have no regrets. Mm-hmm.
There is a bigger burden on schools, it seems, in recent years to deal with this issue.
Yeah, we as a society have, I think to our detriment, expected our schools to do just about everything. From telling our kids right and wrong, being the parent, to teaching, you know, the basics of the basic curriculum. And parents, part of it is because we have two income families, parents have less time with their children, so the expectation is that school picks that up. Schools are very burdened with this, both from an educational standpoint and also just from dealing with it. There's more of these issues, they inevitably come into the classroom, and it becomes a real problem for schools to deal with it. I know our school has a therapist that's on staff 3 days a week and has had to deal with my child from time to time. And thankfully, they were there when my child had this suicidal ideation. So,
well, I'm just thrilled that you reached out and joined NAMI and that you're starting to write a monthly newsletter for us, which we haven't ever had before. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
I think it's awesome to have some new faces and fresh ideas.
Thank you.
And for that, I thank you.
Thanks.
And I just, I hope that down the road we can work together in getting the word out. And I can't thank you enough for being here.
My pleasure. I'm glad to do it. And hopefully, if you're out there listening and you've had these problems or issues, you're not alone. Get some help.
Right.
And
right.
NAMI has a book club, by the way, you might be interested in.
I do know that, yes.
Yeah.
I have to recommend these books to them.
I have a note on that.
Anyway, we have to leave and time flies.
Yes, it does.
You've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back again next week, same time, same station. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimos Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormones. hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113. Or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was